But right now, as we begin our program, I'm very happy and honored to welcome Thomas Frank to our show. He's a political analyst, historian, and author of several important books, including What's the Matter with Kansas? His most recent book is titled Listen, Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People? Tonight, we'll be discussing the 2016 election results and Thomas Frank's recent Guardian newspaper article titled Donald Trump is Moving to the White House and Liberals Put Him There. Thomas, thanks so much for making time to join us tonight. Thomas, I'm sorry. Could you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay, good. Thank you so much for coming to the program tonight. Appreciate you making time for us.
Yeah, no problem.
In your article, Donald Trump is moving to the White House and liberals put him there, you review the expectations most of us had, according to the polls, that it's going to be a cakewalk for Hillary Clinton. And then, of course, you ask the million-dollar question, what went wrong? When we had what we were told was the most qualified presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, versus the least qualified in U.S. history, as many people saw it. Maybe you could give us your answer to that question. What did go wrong for the conventional wisdom?
Wow. Well, that is the big question of them all. So many things, though. I mean, Hillary was exactly the wrong candidate for the moment in a personal sense. You know, she's always she was a sort of a wonkish technocrat. The Democrats have this long-standing love affair with passionless technocrats. You know, they love this certain personality type, and she was one of those, which is exactly what the moment did not call for. She was also dogged by scandal after scandal. You know, they just seem to keep erupting. And there's also it's basically the legacy of Clintonism. You know, Hillary was uniquely vulnerable to the campaign of Trump. In fact, my opinion is that Trump, basically chose his issues because he knew that Hillary would be the Democratic candidate. Everybody could see that, long before. But the trade issue in particular, Hillary was uniquely vulnerable on that front because of her husband's deeds as president. And it's also the philosophy of Clintonism. Now, tell me when you want me to stop. I mean, maybe this is enough for you already, but...
No, keep going.
The philosophy of Clintonism, which treats big parts of the Democratic, constituency with the phrase, they have nowhere else to go. You know, so the Democrat, the leaders don't have to deliver anything to the rank and file because they know that they won't vote for the Republicans, and so therefore they can treat them badly and reach out to affluent people that they really want to do, which is to be a party of the wealthy. And Hillary, I mean, we really have now learned the folly of these strategies.
Well said. I certainly wanted to explore the issues of the Democratic Party not delivering to working class people in this country, the shrinkage of the middle class, and the real lack of any kind of program to address growing income inequality that's been apparent for quite some time, long before the Occupy Wall Street movement. And this is a reality that certainly affects more than just Democrats. And obviously, Donald Trump struck a chord with the people who are coping with that same reality.
Well, when you put it in those terms, you see what you're getting at here. You're describing the same thing that put Barack Obama in the White House in 2008. Only then it was a hopeful movement. I mean, people were scared then too. People were frightened. But what you see in the Trump phenomenon is desperation. It is hope after it has curdled in vinegar for 8 years. You know, people had such high expectations for Barack Obama, and they were disappointed, and I think that they were right to be disappointed. He really did not deliver in all sorts of ways that people expected him to, and it was things that he could easily have done. It's not like they were expecting things that were outlandish or, really radical or completely off the table. He just didn't deliver them. And so there's not just disappointment. When I say desperation, we're talking about people that can see their way of life slipping away from them. You know, the middle class of this country is crumbling. And this is terrifying to people. And they rolled the dice and took a chance on Trump. You know, Hillary did not really promise anything different. I mean, if you read the campaign platform very closely, she had a lot of things that I thought were pretty awesome. I voted for her. I'm certainly not going to vote for a guy like Trump, but the thing is that nobody believed her promises. Nobody really thought she would actually try to get them done. There's just something about the way the Democrats have ruled. It's not just something vague. We'll get into the specifics later, I hope, but people knew that they couldn't really expect anything different from Hillary.
And in your article, you talk about how there was an attitude among many people frustrated with the status quo that they really just wanted to cast a ballot to smash the machine. And Michael Moore put it another way. He said, really, Donald Trump, for many people, was a human Molotov cocktail to just blow things up. And I think he's right.
Another way of putting it is the human middle finger, to the Washington establishment. Of course, now we know the folly of our ways. He's brought back the old Republican establishment. You know, they're back in the saddle again. The old wrecking crew is riding high. But when I was at the Republican convention in Cleveland in July, and I was kind of surprised to see that there was a whole genre of T-shirts, Trump T-shirts, that show Trump flipping the bird at this person and that, or this group of people and that. There's, all sorts of different ones. This was a running theme. That's exactly why people liked him.
We're speaking with Thomas Frank, political analyst, historian, and author. His most recent book is titled Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People. Thomas Frank, do you have optimism that the Democratic Party or progressive forces in general around the country, given the relative success of Bernie Sanders and the enthusiastic support he gathered during the Democratic primary contest, that there is a force in the country that can address some of these deep-seated economic concerns and fears of a lot of people, but move it in a progressive direction, a direction that doesn't prey on people's fears and prejudices?
Well, of course, I have hope that will come to pass. That's got to be the next step within the Democratic Party. That's got to be the next measure that they take. Centrism has really it's the end of the road for Clintonism, I think. And so they have to offer some kind of alternative like that. Now, the irony is they did do that. They did offer that in 2008, and they were very successful with that. It's just that it was very successful as a campaign strategy. And 2008 was a dark and frightening time. In the middle of the financial crisis, we held that election, and we elected Barack Obama on exactly the grounds that you just described. Now, of course, he didn't really deliver. He didn't really follow through on what the public expected from him, and so here we are. For years I have been writing articles, making policy suggestions for the Democrats for how they might tackle the sort of growing, inequality problem. And nothing that I wrote about ever got taken seriously. Nothing happened. These were things that Obama could do. They weren't things that he needed the Republican Congress, to go along with him on. Things that he could do. He didn't do any of them. And now they have nothing. They don't have the presidency. They don't have Congress, the Supreme Court. You look at the state legislatures of America. They've been wiped out to a degree that we have never seen before in my entire lifetime. And what can I say? It's so deeply, horrifyingly ironic because it was just a few years ago that they were so, in 2012, that the Democrats here in Washington were so pleased with themselves. You know, they would talk about the coalition of the ascendant and how they had a permanent lock on the presidency. You know, the Republic, their coalition was growing and the Republicans' coalition was shrinking in numbers. And now look at what has happened to them. I mean, this is as awful a result as it is possible to imagine. I think that basically it's all now in the hands of Donald Trump. And, if he delivers as president to this, you know, to the working class people that have put their trust in him, which I think is unlikely, by the way, but if he does, I mean, I thought everything was unlikely, so, you know, what the hell, right? If he does succeed and he reverses the sort of decline of these, in these people's lives, then he's going to have, you know, a second term and he's going to be regarded as a hero. I think it's far more likely that he will fail, but basically that's the only hope for those, for Democrats now, that this guy is going to crash and burn.
We're speaking with Thomas Frank, author, political analyst, historian, and we're talking about the 2016 election, obviously. Thomas, you spoke of the many things you've written over recent years about policy prescriptions. Review for our audience some of the possible the policy prescriptions that Barack Obama and the Democrats in general could have embraced to have really addressed the economic decline of people across middle America.
Well, let's just for the sake of let's just confine ourselves to the things that are that were obvious and that he could have done that he that were within his power. And the most important one is that he should have gotten very aggressive and tough with the Wall Street banks after he became president. You know, he should have, for example, fired the management, you know, which he had, that was well within his authority to do in the bailout days. He did fire the management of General Motors, but not, Wall Street banks, that they never were subject to that kind of scrutiny or any kind of, you know, any kind of punishment. I also think he should have put a lot of them out of business. Citibank, for example, should have been broken down into its parts. He should have prosecuted a lot of Wall Street bankers. He should have unwound a lot of the bailouts. All of these things would have been very, very helpful for this country. And while he was doing that, he should have arranged for, you know, bailouts for average homeowners whose homes were underwater, you know, who were underwater on their mortgages, which was on the table and was proposed in Congress, but the president let it go. He should have made it easier to form labor unions, which is basically impossible in America now. The unions begged him to do it, and he didn't. He didn't raise a finger. Then to talk about things that he could have done after the Republicans had taken Congress away from him, people don't remember this, but when he ran in 2008, one of the reasons he was the nominee instead of Hillary Clinton was because of the Iowa caucuses. It was a big surprise win that he had in the Iowa caucuses in 2008, because Iowa, of course, is a very white state. And he won there to everyone's surprise and went on to become the nominee and become the president. And the way he won Iowa was by promising farmers there that he was going to get tough with agricultural monopolies. He never did. And he could do it right now if he wanted to. He is the president. The laws are on the books. All it requires is enforcement. The antitrust laws of this country are still very much intact. He could be doing that right now. I mean, there are other examples. He also, of course, promised that he would renegotiate NAFTA back in 2008. That's fully within his power, as we are about to watch, President Trump do it. It was fully within his power the entire time he was president, you know, to walk away from that treaty. And, it doesn't require Congress. It didn't happen. I mean, he changed his mind on NAFTA almost as soon as he became president. You see what I'm getting at here? This is a man that people trusted to bring some kind of transformation. And instead, here we are 8 years after it, and working class people are looking at what happened to them in the recession, and they feel like it's permanent. You know, they can see that their way of life is not ever coming back. And you start to understand their desperation. But, I mean, to be perfectly honest, Democrats have to admit that they first entrusted us with that task. I shouldn't say us. I'm not in the government. I've never been in the government. They first entrusted Democrats with that task,
mm-hmm.
and Democrats failed.
Thomas, what about the racism? There's a lot of analysis going on, exit poll data being, poured over about the attitudes of average folks out there and what role racism played in this backlash that a lot of people say put Trump in power here, despite his losing the popular vote. He won the electoral votes and certainly millions of people voted.
Oh, yeah, it was very close. I mean, you look at how the slim margins by which it was decided in all of these Rust Belt states, it's extraordinary. I'm not going to downplay the Trump's racism. It was deeply offensive. You know, his bigotry towards Muslims, that was reprehensible. The question is, how big a role does this play in his voters? And obviously, you've got this sort of white sheet faction, and they were thrilled to have Donald Trump as the candidate. I think a lot of other voters, they knew he, and I should, we got to point out his incredible sexism here too. You think about people in my home state of Kansas for whom that was obviously extremely distasteful. These are people that go to church every Sunday. These are very moral people. And hearing Donald Trump, in that famous or notorious hot microphone, conversation, that had to be, deeply disturbing to these people, and they voted for him anyways. What I'm trying to get at here is that I think that a lot of, we don't know just how many people are motivated by racism and how many are motivated by what I just described, the sort of fraying, the unraveling of the middle class. And there's probably a lot of people who are motivated by both. But ultimately, it is issues like it is economic issues that generally decide elections like this almost always. Bigotry has not been enough to get someone elected president for a long time in this country. So I would suspect that the main factor here, but I don't want to downplay it. I think Trump is really reprehensible. And his bigotry was, obviously put him, for people like me, completely outside the range of the acceptable. But it's hard to say exactly what motivated his voters and by what margin.
Thomas Frank, when you look at the fear that a lot of people have around this country about the xenophobia, the racism, the misogyny, what effective strategy do you think would be best employed here in this era where we really don't know which Donald Trump will take the oath of office on January 21st?
I don't know what the best strategy is. You've already seen several people or important groups here in Washington, liberal groups, I should say, saying that they will work with him on. I mean, he had a number of issues that were that were pretty far to the left for a Republican. For example, basically throwing free trade under the bus, and willing to renegotiate trade agreements. And so the AFL-CIO has said they'll work with him on that. He wants to get a big stimulus package. That would be great. And a lot of liberals are willing to go with that. Obviously he has to be stopped on things like setting up the police force that was going to go around and deport people. That's completely unacceptable. And so many of the other things that he has suggested are as well. And he has to be fought on these things. Fought to the end, but we'll see. I mean, we don't really know which Donald Trump is going to show up and what exactly he'll propose. And he's already shown significant signs of sanity. where he said that he, you know, he's had second thoughts about Obamacare, and now he wants to keep big pieces of it, you know, which sort of what we all predicted all along, you know, because big parts of Obamacare are very, very popular, and nobody wants to do away with them. And if you did do away with them, it would materially, it would really harm the, you know, materially harm the very people that just voted for you. So you can't really do that sort of thing. So, you know, we shall see.
Well, Thomas, we only have about a minute or two left. What would you suggest for the Democrats if they set about the project of formulating a new New Deal to really address the core concerns of millions of Americans out there who feel like they've been ignored by Democrats and certainly Republicans over the many decades?
It can be done. It has to. They have to start over from scratch. Basically, is my feeling. I mean, people will have 4 years from now, or even 2 years from now, people will be feeling very differently about all of these things, and there'll be an opening for that kind of thing. And you know, it's high time for exactly what you describe, a new sort of New Deal. Look, in some ways, I'm very hopeful about the situation that we're in. Trump has shown, among other things, that anything is possible in politics. Hillary outspent him. I mean, she had ads everywhere. He had virtually none. She had every newspaper endorsement in America. She had celebrities behind her. She had everything going for her. And this guy won. All the rules that we have been told were, you know, set in stone for my entire lifetime, all those rules are gone. You know, all the stuff about how you have to have billionaires on your side and, you know, you have to be able to match the Republicans in ads. None of that means anything anymore. And that, there is a really wonderful freedom out there. And I hope that we can take advantage of it and rebuild this thing.
Thomas Frank, it's a great pleasure to talk to you. And I'm very happy that we've left on an optimistic note, because I agree with you. There is opportunity out there despite our current trauma and concern and fear. But thank you so much for spending time with us. And can you direct our listeners to your website where they can get a look at your book, Listen Liberal, as well as the articles that you've got out there?
The best place to do that is I have a Facebook page that's open to the public where I link to all the articles that I've written. And if you can't find that, go to tcfrank.com and it will steer you in that direction.
Excellent. Thomas, thanks again for spending time with us and all the important work you do. Appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Thomas Frank, political analyst, historian, and author. You know his books, What's the Matter with Kansas?, Listen Liberal, or Whatever Happened to the Party of the People is his latest book. And he just wrote an article for the Guardian newspaper titled Donald Trump is Moving to the White House and Liberals Put Him There. I'd certainly recommend it for your reading this evening or tomorrow.